The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me, so I'm telling you, don't be fooled. The real Eric's in jail.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the program.
Wow.
It's Albin, it sounds like you. How did you get in here?
I don't know. I came down here just for the eclipse, and I thought the moon was going to double back, and maybe I could spot it. No?
Yeah, the eclipse, I thought it was canceled because of budget cuts, but it was actually, happened.
It went up. Yeah, the lights on Broadway, right?
All right, now listen. We've got a couple things we have to mention here. First of all, today, in both hours, I'm talking to Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson for 2 hours, and he's hard to wrangle.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like it's kind of like herding bees, but in a good way,
because
he's amazing.
Well, all you need to do is put some Canadian maple syrup out like a trap.
And he's a lot like he's like the intellectual Mike Lindell. He's just hard to wrestle because he's just so, you know, so much energy. It's amazing. But anyway, both hours today, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Jordan Peterson. That's coming up. Get ready. It's crazy. And now we've got to talk about the last couple of days.
Right.
I mean, I was here in the studio a couple of days ago. Then I blasted out of here to drive to the bookstore, New Life Christian Bookstore in Queens, middle of nowhere.
It's a three-story bookstore, though, right?
It's in the middle of nowhere in Queens. And I drove my car, so I had to come here, drive my car. I normally drive my car. I got a Chevy Tahoe.
Right.
It's like 2012 Chevy Tahoe. People want to know, you know, how does Eric Metaxas roll?
Yeah.
Well, I literally roll with a 2012 Chevy Tahoe. That is my vehicle. And I had to drive it here to the studio. As soon as we were done here, I had to drive way out to Queens to sign 1,030 books.
With your hands.
My new book with this hand. My new book, every time you get an autographed book from Eric Metaxas, I signed it. It's not like, you know, some automatic pen or whatever somebody might think it is.
I thought you paid college kids to do that.
Well, yes, I do.
Oh.
No, I graduated college, so I'm qualified to do it myself. So I sign every single book. You know, if you buy three of them, you'll see the signature is different in every one. But to sign 1,000 books is exhausting.
Yeah.
It is exhausting. And I was not looking forward to it, even though I'm honored that people would want to get an autographed book. And by the way, you can get these books from SocratesInTheCity.com. Only copies of my new book, Religionless Christianity, can get at SocratesInTheCity.com autographed, right? So, but the point is I had to go sign them. So I drive out there. I'm kind of feeling sorry for myself because I'm thinking this is just like brain-killing work to sign 1,000 books. But then as I'm driving out there, I thought, wait a minute. Praise the Lord in all circumstances. Be thankful, you know, in all circumstances.
Have a good attitude.
So
right,
I said, the Lord will meet me as he sees fit. So I'm there and I'm signing books. And one guy comes in to the bookstore. He's looking for a book. I start talking to him. We had a wonderful conversation. He's in New York in corrections. He works. And he was asking me, so it was just kind of fascinating talking to him as I'm signing the books. Then four Norwegian guys stumble in. This sounds like a folktale. Four Norwegian guys, like three of them college age, the other one like, you know, maybe late 30s or whatever. And they're from some Bible college in Norway.
Hmm.
And they're in the middle of Queens. Anybody knows Queens, the middle of Queens, like there's some bookstore on Queens Boulevard,
Yeah,
near the Van Wyck Parkway. So these Norwegian guys come in and they're talking to Rich, the owner, about, you know, they're asking him about these books, or whatever. And but they're literally from Norway.
Do they have smoked
fish on them? I think they know. And they were staying someplace in New Jersey and they kind of want to go to a Christian bookstore. And the best one is New Life Christian Bookstore in Queens. Right.
Yeah.
So they go, they make this pilgrimage to the bookstore. So one of these young guys, I guess we're talking a little bit, and one of them, they didn't know about my Bonhoeffer book or anything. I mean, they're college kids. And because I said, that's the only book I've ever written that's translated into Norwegian. And so we're talking. So a few minutes later, one of these guys comes back with my book, Is Atheism Dead?
Mm. Yep.
And he says, did you write this book? I said, yes. And he says, I have read this book in Norwegian. And I said, I don't think so. I said, I would know if my book was translated into Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I shoved him. And he fell down. No, just kidding.
And then
he pulled out a smoked version
of that book
and
that he had smoked and pickled.
And I said, seriously, I don't think my book was translated into Norwegian. I mean, I would know because usually the publisher, they would send you a copy and I'd have that at home.
Yeah.
And so he then comes over with his friend. The friend pulls out his phone and shows me on his phone a copy of my book, Is Atheism Dead, in Norwegian. So he was right. It was translated into Norwegian. The publisher never sent me a copy. I was blown away, right?
Wow.
So we're talking. He says, yeah. He goes, I have dyslexia. I don't like to read books, but I started reading your book, Is Atheism Dead? I couldn't put it down. And it sort of changed his life. He decided from this book that he wanted to go to a Bible college specifically to study apologetics.
Wow.
This young guy is telling me this, right? His name was Jonas. And I said, are you kidding? And then he says to me, if not for your book, I would not be here in the United States today.
Wow.
Because this book made him decide to go to this Bible college, and the Bible college had a trip to America, and he's on this trip. And on this trip, he stumbles into a bookstore in Queens, and the author of the book happens to be at the bookstore that day.
Wow.
I was so blown away. Honestly, it was so amazing.
Did you sign it then for free?
No, there's no Norwegian copy of the book, so I couldn't. I mean, not in the bookstore in Queens, but it was just such a joyful thing. I just have to say, it was amazing. And then, of course,
what are the odds of that?
It was nuts. There's certain things that you just say, if that's not a miracle, that's a miracle. It was nuts, and I'm giving you the fast version. But so then I drove to Danbury, you know, hanging out with my mom up there, and I decided the next day I bought all these trees that I want to plant.
Oh yeah.
So yesterday I'm in Danbury, Connecticut, planting trees.
Mm-hmm.
But my car is making these funny sounds, so I had to take it into the dealership. It just ended up being an insane.
What do you want from a 2012 Tahoe?
Well, no, but that's the point. It's a 2012
because they recalled
Chevy Tahoe.
Those.
Oh, stop it! So I had to get the car fixed. By God's grace, I got it fixed in time. Planting the trees, getting the car fixed, then I jump in the car and drive. I had to drive back. Why? Because Jordan Peterson last night was at Radio City Music Hall here in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
did he sing Feelings Nothing?
You know, that's not part of his repertoire.
Did he do high kicks like the Rockettes?
No.
That's too bad.
But Radio City was packed. It was unbelievable. I got to go backstage but all this was in preparation for what you're going to hear in a few minutes. My conversation with him. But so, you know, to be there last night at Radio City and then today, the only reason it kind of worked out that I got to interview him on this program, which you'll hear in a couple of minutes, is because the Babylon Bee guys, who they interviewed him for something else, and they thought, oh, he's in New York. Can we use your building at TBN? Yes. So they did that here.
Yeah.
So we were hanging out with them. If I sound exhausted, it's because I was hanging out with the
Babylon
Bee guys.
It was like a real
Bee
house party here today. I mean, the Babylon Bee guys, they were doing sketches. It was very unusual.
Yeah.
In a good way, but it was a lot.
In a good way. And Albin, you're a living witness.
I am a living witness.
You're kind of like the last man who saw Lincoln shot. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but I didn't
tell
shoot
us
him.
Your story. No, but I mean, it was amazing. So we had the Babylon Bee guys. We had Jordan Peterson. We had Albin. We had Eric Swithin with the Fatherless.
Yes.
We actually had to cut our last guest because we just ran out of time. Everything kind of ran over. But, you know, you had an interview with Kyle Mann that was very funny.
Yeah.
That they're going to air on their...
the Babylon Bee interviewed me.
Yes. So you'll see
for a film that they're making that's coming out in September.
And I just want to mention real quick, when I was working with you, many years ago, the number one guest people kept wanting you to have on was Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not kidding. Since day one, there were Jordan Peterson. How about Erica interviewed Jordan Peterson? Jordan Peterson. We kept trying to get him.
Yeah.
And you stumbled into
him. Well, to me, this is just the warm-up. I want to interview him for Socrates in the City.
Yes.
Like in Athens or something like that. But anyway, it was it's extraordinary. You're going to hear that conversation. It's a little bit all over the place because there's certain people like Jordan Peterson. I mean, he's so brilliant. And, you know, I don't know where to start.
It was great. But by the way, we need to thank our supporters for our campaign.
Oh, Alliance Defending Freedom. Folks, those of you who gave to the Alliance Defending Freedom campaign, I want to say, I should have been saying
this. Thank you so much.
We hit our goal. I never dreamt we would hit our goal. Because of you, we hit our goal. We exceeded our goal. The Alliance Defending Freedom are heroes. And those of you who gave, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's just an amazing, amazing thing, the fact that so many of you gave. We impressed the brass at Salem.
Yeah.
They really thought, Eric, I don't know how you did this. Because Hugh Hewitt, he didn't raise his goal. None of them did. Yeah. None of them.
Seth.
My goal was to beat Hugh Hewitt. No, but it's so amazing. God bless you guys. You're the best audience. Okay, when we come back, 2 hours of Jordan Peterson.
Buckle up, buddy.
Remember as a kid, your parents and grandparents making you try all the vegetables on your plate, or when they coaxed you to eat fruit instead of sweets? That's because they knew what was good for you, and it's truer today than ever before. You need to eat your fruits and veggies. There's no substitute for a healthy diet, but there is Balance of Nature. Their products are gluten-free and non-GMO, and they contain no added sugars or synthetics. If you're looking for something to make you feel better naturally, you should definitely try Balance of Nature today. Eat your fruits and veggies every single day with Balance of Nature. I started taking Balance of Nature the day I decided I was ready to feel better. Are you ready to start? Whether you order online or call them direct, you must use the promo code ERIC to get the special offer of 35% off. Call them at 800-2468-751 and use discount code ERIC or order online at balanceofnature.com. Use discount code ERIC to get 35% off. I'll say it again, 800-2468-751. Use discount code ERIC or order online at balanceofnature.com. Use discount code ERIC to get 35% off.
Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in real gold and silver online. In a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or shipped to your door. You have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. You'll see transparent pricing on each coin and bar. This puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit legacypminvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A true diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. This new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with a few clicks. Visit legacypminvestments.com to get started. You're going to love this free new tool they've added, legacypminvestments.com. Legacypminvestments.com. Check it out.
Welcome to the program. Folks, I have a particularly special guest with me today. Oh, no, it's just Jordan Peterson. Jordan, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
You're one of those people that I don't know where to begin with you because you're large, you're vast, you contain multitudes. We could talk about so many different things. Can we start with something banal and specific? You're from Canada. Just true or
it's
false? Just true or false?
More banal or specific than that.
I'm sorry. Well, I don't know.
Yes,
I'm
from Canada.
Yes, you're from Canada. But yes. Here you are in America.
I know.
Are you doing something like a tour or anything?
I'm on a 51-city tour through the U.S. and down into Central America and South America.
Wow.
Yeah. So that ends in June. We're about halfway through it at the moment.
Yes. You're going to be in Wallingford, Connecticut. Because my brother lives in Wallingford. Yesterday, of course, just yesterday, you were in Radio City Music Hall.
Yep.
It's amazing on a number of levels. That is just one of the iconic spaces in the world.
Yep.
And the idea that you, Jordan Peterson, have risen to a level where you stand on a stage and talk, and you know about 6,000 people show up to hear you,
yep.
Color me impressed.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Isn't it amazing? It's wonderful.
Yes, and if you have any sense in my position, you understand how remarkable that is, and you're very grateful for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just very unlikely.
It's very unlikely. Well, first of all, as you pointed out, I'm Canadian, so just that in itself.
We don't like that.
Yeah, I know.
Other than William Shatner, we're not interested in Canadians. Well, again, there's so much to say. Let's just start with that. Last night, packed house, Radio City, and the title of the tour is the We Who Wrestle with God Tour. Part of the conversation, part of your lecture, and then the subsequent conversation with Constantine has to do with the question of who is God. And you seemed to me in the course of things to define God for me, a Christian, somewhat oddly. Not really oddly, but somewhat oddly, because you're coming from the perspective of a Jungian analyst, and so I thought, why don't we just start there? When the title of the tour is We Who Wrestle with God.
That's what the name Israel means. We Who Wrestle with God.
I think I knew that.
Israel is the chosen people of God, and that implies that those who wrestle with God are his chosen people. And you might say, well, what does that mean? And to wrestle with God.
I might say, what does that mean?
Exactly,
for example,
exactly.
Right now, I will say it. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we have to make moral decisions, right? And in ignorance. And so that's always a wrestling. It's always difficult. Conflicts of duty, well, the choice between good and evil, that's obviously one form of wrestling, but the choice between various goods, it's often the case that the most serious conflicts that we have in our life are choices between positive options, for example. It's always a wrestling. It's difficult. And life is that wrestling. And it is that because there's not really much difference between moral decisions and decisions, right? To decide to act in a certain way is to privilege that pathway of action above all others. That's a value judgment. That's a moral decision. Part of what the biblical library is trying to investigate is, what is it that should be put in the highest place? I mean, you could argue nothing. You could argue that there's a plethora of goods with no fundamental union. That's not the monotheistic hypothesis. The monotheistic hypothesis is that all value culminates in an ultimate value. And that speaks of something like an underlying unity to being and to becoming.
You know, you sound a lot like Jordan Peterson. Has anyone ever told you that?
Yes, it's very sad.
It's uncanny. Yeah. It's uncanny. Just now, everything you said, I said, that's exactly like Jordan Peterson. If you weren't Jordan Peterson, it would be strange. Do you ever find it funny that you're talking about morality, which on some level is extremely basic, right? Sacrifice, do good, don't be a narcissistic jerk. I mean, all of these things, we've fallen into a place in Western culture where this is big news. This is shocking information. And it's part of the reason why so many people are flocking to see you and to hear you and to read your books, because we haven't been getting this message.
We're at a point where the obvious needs to be explained.
Now, last night, I found it particularly fascinating when you were talking about the advent in 1961, I don't think you gave the date, but of the pill. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, because that seems to me to be a way of framing this.
Well, it's easy to think. It's easy to think of the pill primarily as a technological accomplishment.
Right.
But there is no technological accomplishment independent of its moral frame, because all technologies have a purpose, and anything that has a purpose is in the domain of moral aim. Essentially, by definition. So what's the ethos of the pill? Well, in its best manifestation, it would be the allowance for people who are in committed relationships to determine when they're going to have children, so that their children can have the best chance to survive and to thrive. But that's only one part of the ethos, because the other part is pleasure without responsibility. And that, you might say, well, that's fine. But you see, we don't know if that's fine. And my sense is it's not fine at all. Generally speaking, pleasure without responsibility isn't fine. It's impulsive, immature, and hedonistic. And the reason that's not good is because it can't sustain itself productively across time. Things that sustain themselves productively across time tend to be those paths of action that require sacrifice, delay of gratification, prioritization of the community, prioritization of the future, and that's not commensurate with a hedonistic orientation. Does the pill produce a tilt towards a radical hedonism? Well, obviously, like, I don't think that's the least bit contentious. How dangerous is that? We don't know.
Although
it might be fatal.
But we're seeing now, for the first time, and I think this explains your popularity, that things have been slowly falling apart, but suddenly here we are, and we're living in a world of moral chaos. It is the result, at least in part, of the pill, of the sexual revolution, mostly of the sexual revolution.
Yeah, well, but those two things are really inseparable, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had the pill without a sexual revolution and vice versa.
Okay,
right?
Hang on. So, you said this last night, yeah. And I wished I'd been on the stage in Constantine's place because I wanted to ask you about it. Now I get to do that. You were talking about how before we could have the pill, before we could have people trying to create such a thing as the birth control pill, we had to have, in a sense, the moral foundation or the crumbling of the moral foundation to lead to that. What was that? In other words, it's not clear to me because I see that the pill more led to that than that those things led to the pill. Mm-hmm. What are the antecedents in the 50s and the 40s that you believe led to that moment? Because I don't quite see it. When I think of the Eisenhower 50s, I don't think of a world longing for the technology.
Well, the 50s were more revolutionary than people understand. Like the 60s, in some sense, were the full manifestation of what started in the 1950s. And you had a consumer-oriented society, and that was driven by like capitalist marketing to a large degree. And I'm not precisely complaining about that, but the groundwork for...
Was the downside kind of the free market.
Yeah, well, the downside of the free market is the appeal to immediate gratification. And why is that a downside? Well, because what gratifies you immediately is not necessarily good for the community or for the long run. That's technically the reason. I mean, the reason two-year-olds can't survive on their own or in groups is because they're too oriented to the moment and not sufficiently oriented to the community or the future. I mean, that's technically the problem. And so you have to substitute for that short-term hedonistic orientation something that has a much broader purview.
But, I mean, what I don't often find fiscal conservatives talking about, people who are fans of the free market, they don't talk about the fact, the inescapable fact, that it's the same as when the American founders talked about self-government. You have to have a moral and virtuous citizenry, or they will simply elect Hitler or Stalin or some other monster. In the free market, it will simply give you, if you are not yourself reasonably virtuous, it will simply give you what you ask for. So we'll get better, cheaper pornography and drugs. So the free market is neutral. It's a wonderful thing, but unless you have a virtuous moral population, it leads to wicked things. She took my heart away.
I have a great story to tell you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. Here's what they just did. They bought the Bidenomics.com website name from under Joe Biden's nose. That's like Pepsi buying Coca-Cola.com. Do yourself a favor and visit Bidenomics.com. Portions of the Eric Metaxas Show are brought to you in part by Americans for Prosperity.
For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I am proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to
patriotmobile.com/Metaxas, patriotmobile.com/Metaxas, or call 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use the offer code Metaxas. Join me. Make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Metaxas.
Hey, this is Eric Metaxas. For years, I've told you about Nutramedics, a professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993. Nutramedics offers a variety of health bundles. Whether you want to support your immune system, improve your sleep, promote joint comfort, or detoxification support, Nutramedics has a health bundle right for you. The best part about Nutramedics, every year they donate a minimum of 50% of their profits to Christian charities and missions. That's right, 50% of their profits. Nutramedics has a goal of surpassing $100 million in giving by 2030. Many of you take supplements already. Switch to Nutramedics. It's the highest quality, and they donate 50% of their profits. Get 15% off by using the code ERIC during checkout. Go to Nutramedics.com and search health bundles. Support your health while helping others in need. Go to Nutramedics. That's NutraMedix.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off. Again, Nutramedics, NutraMedix.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off. Folks, welcome back to my conversation with Jordan Peterson.
In the ultimate case, the free market becomes the pool of narcissists, right? Because it offers you what you want instantly. And cell phones are a very good example of that, because they're better and better, and they'll get unbelievably good at this, in figuring out what will maximally attract your attention in the short term. And they'll do that not only by assessing your patterns of attention, your purchasing habits and so on, so that they can predict what else it is that would hook you to your screen, but also offer you what you want, what the impulsive part of you wants now. But they'll develop very rapidly to the point where they're actually tracking your eye movements, for example, and that's a very good index of where you're attending. And we'll be able to predict with increasingly stunning accuracy exactly what it is that can be offered to you to keep you on the platform.
This sounds like a nightmare.
Well, it's already a nightmare to some degree. I mean, it is a weird nightmare, and you pointed that out already. It's like, what's the nightmare of being offered exactly what you want when you want it all the time? Well, in some ways, that's the nightmare of cocaine. I mean, cocaine activates the same neural pathways that are activated when you're doing something worthwhile. That's what cocaine does. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, if you obtain that without actually doing something worthwhile, it's not only radically false, but it's radically counterproductive in that it can't sustain itself. And so a descent into the pool of narcissists is a society that can't, it lacks the moral virtues that you described that enable even a technologically complex society to survive.
Well, I mean, this is where we have to get to, you know, the definition of who are we, what is man, and then later I want to get to the idea of who is God, or at least as you see it. Mm-hmm. But the question, if you have a kind of lefty, Rousseauian, utopianist view of humanity, you think that we're not fallen, and therefore you don't worry about the things that we're talking about.
Well, as you said, that also is a flaw on the libertarian side. You know, yes. The libertarians might say, well, you can allow people to engage in cooperation and competition in relationship to what they want, and the system will balance itself optimally without governance, let's say.
Yeah.
But the flaw in that reasoning is, who is this you that wants? Like, why is it that, this is something that's very germane to our current society. People now identify themselves with their wants. So that means what they do is they identify themselves with something that possesses them, that they think is them. So, for example, if your identity is sexual, well, then what you've done is reduced who you are to the sexual impulse, which essentially means that the sexual impulse is now elevated to the status of God.
And you're less than fully human.
Well, who you are is a very complicated problem. Part of who you are is what the impulses within you want right now. But that's kind of an immature and dangerous part of you, and it isn't obvious at all that you want that to get the upper hand. Then there's the you that makes itself manifest communally. So, for example, if you're a father with a family of children, then who you are is the sacrifice of that whim-predicated individuality to the long-term stability of wife and family and the inculcation of virtue in the children. That's a much different concept of what constitutes you. And we've been sold, even by the capitalists, let's say, we've been sold this idea that you're best summed up by your desires. And that's a very low estimation of what it means to be human. And fundamentally, it's empty. That's why people find it meaningless.
Didn't Freud get us here? The idea that at the heart of everything is the libido, which I think is complete nonsense. I mean, to define people that way, but he did that.
It wasn't
and
just
affected
Freud. The evolutionary
last,
biologist.
No, I know,
did
but
it
I'm
too.
Saying it affected the last 100 years.
Okay. So here's one way of thinking about it that I think is very useful. When what unites at the highest level disintegrates, so that's the death of God, let's say, you immediately get two competing deities. You get hedonism, you get sex, and you get power. And so Freud, Darwin, the evolutionary biologists, all those who believe that we can be reduced in some ways to the reproductive impulse, Richard Dawkins would fall into that camp. Sex is, there's no difference between the human being and the sexual impulse. Okay, well, so you have that side of it, but then you have the power mongers like Marx and Foucault, the postmodernists who say, well, no, the fundamental drive is domination, right? I'm maneuvering, whether I know it or not, constantly to get my way with force and compulsion. Now, those two things dance, right? You get because of course, basically, the reason you want power is to gratify your hedonistic whims. Like, what else is it good for, fundamentally? Those two things dance evilly. In the book of Revelation, you have a symbol of the end of time. And the symbol is this multi-headed scarlet beast with the Whore of Babylon on its back. Okay, so the scarlet beast is blood-colored, and the heads are male. And so the scarlet beast is the degeneration of masculinity. So non-degenerate masculinity is unified. When it fragments, it has many heads. It starts to turn into a hydra. It's pointing in all sorts of different directions. That's the scarlet beast of the patriarchal state. Okay, what's on its back? Degenerate femininity. Well, obviously, when things degenerate, you have the degeneration of what's masculine, you have the degeneration of what's feminine, and they work in concert.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. Yes, it's because of cancel culture, but as a result, they get to pass the savings on to you directly by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, some you may not even know about. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sand. $25. There's six-pack towels, just $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, the premium MyPillows with all new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. The amazing offer will not last long. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code ERIC, or call 800-978-3057. That's promo code ERIC, 800-978-3057, promo code ERIC, or go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ERIC. Welcome back. We continue my conversation with Jordan Peterson.
Well, when the masculine degenerates, it's going in many directions at once in a manner that will lead to bloodshed. That's the scarlet beast. And what it offers as it degenerates is hedonistic self-gratification and the commodification of female sexuality. Well, that's happening everywhere. Now, what happens in the Revelation story is the scarlet beast kills the prostitute. And with regard to the pill, we talked about the pill. So the pill offered the whole sexual revolution, offered endless sexual gratification. Okay, so what's happening now? Well, I think it's 30% of Japanese under 30 are virgins. It's something like that. It's about the same level in Korea. That's where we're headed. People don't have relationships. The people who have the most sex are married religious people.
Well, I mean, we can put sex to the side. What about marriage? That's interesting that in a country as traditional as Japan, you would have things devolve to where family is not central. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, well, it's happening all over the world. And part of that happening is the absolute catastrophic plummeting of birth rate. And if you looked at that from through a religious lens, that's very straightforward. Any society that doesn't prioritize the virgin and child dies.
Because that's the virgin and the child.
Yeah. The maiden, the mother and the child.
Yeah.
Like, what's the proper image of femininity? Well, one image is the Whore of Babylon. That's like disinhibited female sexuality, right? That's the sex pot. And certainly that's the Playboy bunny. That's the penthouse model. That's the OnlyFans hooker, you know? And there's an undeniable attraction to that, which is pure immediate sexual gratification. But, and then you might say, well, what's the alternative vision? Well, the alternative vision for femininity isn't singular. It's mother and child. It's mother and infant. And speaking psychologically, the reason that that's a sacred image is because a society that doesn't have that image at its foundation, doesn't value that above all else or virtually all else, is fatally impaired. Well, obviously, because it can't even propagate itself.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the practicality of obeying the moral order, that it's what works, and if we don't, things fall apart. Can we have morality without God? I mean, I would say that we couldn't, but it seems that you somehow are making a case for moral order. But I'm not clear where God is in that.
Either at the apex or at the foundation, depending on the metaphor you use. So the more fundamental the moral injunction, the more sacred it is, and the closer it gets to what constitutes God by definition. The religious enterprise is in the depths of the moral enterprise. It's a matter of definition in some ways. It's that there are moral injunctions upon which many other moral injunctions depend. They're in a hierarchical relationship. I'll give you an example. So there's a story in the Gospels where a lawyer, might be a scribe, basically an academic, or a Pharisee, which is a religious hypocrite, tries to trap Christ.
Not necessarily, to be clear. Some, they were good Pharisees, but we now...
The Pharisees are religious hypocrites. They're not Pharisees, not in any fundamental sense. They're religious hypocrites. They're people who use the religious enterprise for their own self-aggrandizement, and they're the fundamental enemy of Christ in the Gospels.
But I'm saying, but there were Pharisees who didn't behave the way we think of Pharisees. Nicodemus and others who were actually good, but as a whole, yes, they were guilty of behaving like what we call Pharisees.
Yeah. Well, the Pharisees play the role of religious hypocrites in the gospel story.
Right.
And so that's rough, hard on them.
Right.
But
there's a story about a lawyer. So
they're trying to trap Christ into saying something heretical so they can get rid of him because he's so annoying. And so they ask him what the greatest commandment is. Now, the reason they ask him that, they're like crooked journalists. They're laying a trap.
Right.
The idea is, there's nothing you can say that won't convict you, right? Because no matter what commandment Christ picks, he downplays the other nine, and so they can get him on charge of heresy and have him arrested. That's the game. And that the other game is that scribe or Pharisee or lawyer will be the one whose entrapment of Christ redounds to their moral virtue and elevates their relative status. That's the game crooked journalists play when they try to destroy someone's reputation to gain slightly in relationship to their public appearance. And that's a very common game for narcissistic journalists. All journalists aren't narcissistic, but there are plenty of them that are, and that's their game. Well, Christ inverts that game. He steps outside the question, and he says that all 10 commandments are the manifestation of a more fundamental commandment, the great commandment, which is something like, love God with all your heart, which means to commit to the highest aim that makes itself manifest to you, and to love other people as if they're yourself. And there's a dynamism. So the first part of that is orient yourself upward so that your motivation in your actions and your words is to lay out and describe the pathway to the highest possible level of moral accomplishment. And then the next is to extend that horizontally and to make the assumption that every person that you're talking to is equally and implicitly of divine virtue. It's something like that. And Christ's proclamation is that all Ten Commandments stem from that meta-commandment. Well, so imagine that there's 100 rules, and those rules are derived from 10 commandments, and those commandments are derived from two principles. And then imagine there's something underneath that principle that's one thing. That's God, by definition. Now, in the Christian conception of things, that God is represented in multiple ways. But one of the ways that that unifying principle is represented is as the principle of voluntary exposure to pain, betrayal, death, and malevolence. Right, so the hoisting of the cross, the voluntary hoisting of the cross, is assimilated to the unifying spirit. And the claim there is that the willingness to bear the entire existential burden of life voluntarily is the same as the spirit that creates order at the beginning of time. It's a set of propositions. There's a hierarchical relationship. There's something at the bottom or the top, depending on the metaphor. The thing that's at the bottom is, by definition, God. Now, the monotheistic hypothesis is that the thing at the bottom is one thing, that there's a fundamental unity. Now, there doesn't have to be. Hypothetically, there could be a plurality. But the cost of a plurality is confusion.
You wonder why I always dress in black.
Welcome back. We continue my conversation with Jordan Peterson. The way Christians say Trinity, you don't mean Trinity as that kind of plurality.
Well, the Trinitarian concept is a reflection of the fact that it's difficult, that it's necessary to develop an understanding of the most fundamental principle. It's necessary to characterize it in multiple ways. Let me give an example of that that's not exactly Trinitarian. So what you see in the biblical stories is a series of characterizations of God and man. And each characterization, so that would be each story, sheds a different light on God and man. And with the insistence that under that multiplicity of characterization is a unity. Okay, so here's some examples. So in Genesis 1, God is the spirit that generates the habitable order that is good or very good out of chaos and possibility. Okay, so that's what you do when you organize your family. There's a domain of possibility, and you grapple with that, and you shape it into something that's good. And you do that insofar as you're acting if you do that properly, insofar as you're acting as the proper image of God. So that's the proclamation in Genesis 1. Just slightly after that, God is characterized as the spirit that punishes prideful presumption. Right, okay, so you say, well, do you believe in that spirit? It's like, well, how often have you got knocked flat because of your prideful presumption?
Although, I mean, but couldn't one argue that that is simply the structure of things? That's reality, but there needn't be a God behind it. Of course, I believe there is, but you know, actions have consequences. There are plenty of people who believe that, practically speaking. They see it, but they don't necessarily acknowledge that there's a personal God
behind it. Well, that is the question. You know, the question is your ultimate relationship with being actually a relationship, right? Well, that's actually a very complicated question, even let's say scientifically. I mean, we're organized at the highest level of analysis as a personality. We exist in relationship to the world. We evolved to exist in relationship to the world. Does that mean that the world is best construed as a place of relationship? Does that mean that the spirit that underlies the world itself is a spirit with whom you have a relationship? It might mean that. It's certainly the case that we act as if it's the case. I'll give an example of this. So I've spoken with many atheists and many rationalist atheists. And the thing that's very interesting about rationalist atheists is that they're annoyed at God. They're not just rationalist atheists. It's not like they're neutral about God.
Right, right.
Now, they often have a reason.
Yeah.
The reason very often is that they were hurt by religious hypocrites.
Mm.
Right. So not only are they maybe a little bit on the thing interest orientation side of the scale, so they tend to look at the world as if it's mechanical rather than existing in relationship, but they're also hurt. They're hurt by the religious hypocrites, and they're angry at God. I mean, I talked to Stephen Fry. This was very, very notable in Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
He got quite agitated when he was talking about bone cancer in children.
Oh, he always goes there. He goes there.
Well, he's morally outraged.
And he seems outraged, and you think, sir, this makes no sense. If there is no God,
who are you?
Why would you be
at?
Outraged? Why, on some level, you could even argue, from where do you get any sense of justice or right or wrong? You know, if we evolved out of the primordial what are you complaining about?
On what grounds are you outraged?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the
question. Well, I guess he would answer that, you know, if and he says he's not, but he's saying if you or I or anyone else is positing this loving God, this omnipotent God, then to him it is offensive that that God would allow these things.
Yeah, but he still doesn't get to take it personally.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.